Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro, and this week my guest is president and co-founder of Simply, Alex Grossman. Alex, good afternoon. Thank you for being on the show.
Good afternoon, John. Great to be here.
I'm so happy to have you on the show. We have known each other for a long time, and you have had a remarkable, interesting technical career, and I've been wanting for a long time to have you on the show so the listeners can hear about all the things that you've done. We met each other when I was at Apple, and you were at Apple, and I want to talk to you about all the things that you've been doing during Apple and since Apple. But first, as we typically do, is sort of a get-to-know session in this first segment of the show. I wanted to ask you, Alex, how you have been an expert on storage and RAID for a long time, but that didn't happen by accident. How did that all get going in your early career? What inspired you, and how did you develop that expertise that you have in storage and RAID and all those things?
John, that's an interesting question, and it's kind of an interesting path. So I went to college, and I degreed in electrical engineering technology, and of course, as a double ET, I really wanted to do what I thought was going to change the world, go build products. That was my thing. It was like, go design things, go build things. And I went to work for a company called DEC that used to be around. Remember Digital Equipment?
Digital Equipment. Oh, yeah. Ken Olson.
Long time ago. And they were kind of on their last legs when I got there. But
Ken Olson was the guy who said, nobody needs a personal computer in their house, right? That was the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were an interesting company. They did a lot of great things in their day, but I got stuck. I'll call it stuck working on CDC disk drives there, and I was at that time aligning them. These were big drive packs, 16 meg and 300 meg packs, and I was aligning these drive packs. It was kind of an interesting first forte. I was a component engineer as well, so I was figuring out what new light bulbs would go into PDP 1117s that were already ancient at the time. That was my whole job, and I started out really, having a love for storage and understanding where things got stored and how they got stored. But like anything else, my career was going to take a quick change because I stayed at DEC for a short period of time, and I discovered that I didn't really want to be an engineer as a component engineer. I really wanted to change the world, and the way you did that was to be a product designer. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
And so I started looking for companies and startups and places where I could have more influence on the products. And I came across this company called Linotype. And at the time, they were a 100-year-old, call it a startup, 100-year-old company that had built, most of the printing equipment or typesetting equipment at the time. And this new thing was coming along called the desktop, if you remember the desktop printing revolution. Laser printers were just coming out. You remember that?
Yeah,
and we started seeing these move down to small companies, and anybody could do desktop publishing on their desktop. And guess what they really needed? Computers and storage. And that's really what got me into the Mac. I mean, I was, I was more of a PC guy, and then I went to Linotype, and they handed me a Mac and said, this is what you should use. This is what designers use. I said, wow, this is great, and never turned back from that point. Well, that's really got where I got my start. I went from Linotype to Xivision. In both places, I was doing product management, and I had SWAT teams of product guys out there working with various countries and designing products. In those days, it was the UK and Germany, and had some time in Taiwan. And we really worked on designing new cool products. And guess what? All of them had to do with storage. And I started doing that, but really where my break came in on storage was I met this gentleman named Dennis Bradshaw, who was at a little company called Micronet Technology, you may remember. They were probably the biggest storage company at the time in the Apple market. And they only had about 8 people when I got there. Met the CEO, Charles McConathy. You have these mentors along the way, and Charles had this really great way of explaining storage, And so we just hit it off. And Charles didn't understand anything about PCs, knew a lot about the Mac. And I started this PC division at Micronet, which grew really rapidly. But like anything else, I started working with Apple. And as soon as I started working with Apple, we came up with some great products there. And so I dug deep and wide into storage. And that's really where I got my start. And I spent many years at Micronet. We grew that thing to close to $250 million in sales, mostly into Apple. But we had so many products that people still remember today. So I think that was really how I got my start, John.
How did you get that relationship going when you were at Micronet with Apple?
Well, it was interesting because we had something that was different. We had a disk array product, one of the early products. We called it the Raven, and it was one of the few products that could actually, as we called it, bang the bus of the Mac. So in the early days, even as Apple started before PCI, they had something called NuBus, and nobody could really saturate NuBus. But we had enough storage performance to do that. And of course, that got the eye of a lot of people at Apple. They, you know, we got their ear, we got their eyeballs, and they started seeing something that could actually, you know, exceed the performance that NuBus had. And so they came to us, and we started working with them quite a bit and co-selling with Apple. And then we got pulled into the fold when they moved to PCIe. And or PCI at the time. And as they moved to PCI, we started building faster and better products. And, you know, what a lot of people don't talk about is we did along the years OEM product to Apple, both software and hardware. And that's when I really started seeing the desktop revolution that happened in desktop publishing start to happen in video. And that was the breakout for me right around, believe it or not, 1996. It was before Apple put Final Cut in place, but it was really there. And that's when I knew that there was something big coming out in the whole change of the way people were doing media.
Did Apple approach you at some point, or did you see an opportunity for Apple and apply through connections or apple.com/jobs, or how did that go?
Well, you know how that timing can just be perfect sometimes?
Yeah, I know.
It was actually... You know, it was a crazy thing because I spent a lot of time at Apple working with Phil Schiller and John Rubinstein at the time on a lot of these products and working with their product managers. And it just so happened that I went there to talk to them about actually acquiring Micronet. And Micronet at the time merged with a company called Ampex. Ampex was quite a big company at the time, but they had had some better times. And so we talked about acquiring, and they said, you know, we really would love to build a server and storage practice back into Apple. In fact, Apple had never done storage in the past, but we had played with servers for a number of years. Remember the NS server and, of course, you know, the early Apple servers. But they really thought they wanted to step it up. And so I got recruited by Steve Jobs.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was actually Steve, and it was great.
Was the context of that Apple at the time was interested in getting more into the enterprise, and they saw this as a gateway?
Yeah, I think it was actually a threefold play there, which were very interesting. So what Apple saw is they saw the enterprise, and, you know, they still look at the enterprise. They just get in there with phones now. But they looked at the enterprise and what customers were looking at, and mainly it was something that people were defining as SMB, so small, medium business. And nobody could really put a good definition on it, but Apple could put that definition on it really easily. They would look at things and say, well, look, you know, a hair salon, a pet store, an auto repair facility. Those people are small, medium business, you know, 20 to 100 people, and they need to use a Mac because it's easier. And Apple really looked at that, and they said there's this SME, small, medium enterprise, people with branch offices that do that. And one thing that Steve Jobs had said, you pull these things up, he had said a lot of times that if you looked at every enterprise everybody had a Mac in their marketing department. In fact, most of their marketing departments were Macs. We found that every Fortune 500 were really Mac-based. And the problem was, how do you support Macs in that environment? And that's where server was great. But the secondary piece of that was also education. And what a lot of people don't understand is that a lot of the higher education facilities, you know, colleges, universities, even high schools, had tens to thousands of Macs that they needed to support. And to do the best job in doing that, you could use a Mac server. And then, of course, the third thing, and this was what I was probably most excited about, was the idea that media companies didn't have an easy way to collaborate or to share things like storage and of course, just content in general. The whole idea of file sharing was just so broken because the files were so big, and I saw a way we could fix that.
Something I've always wanted to ask you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Something I've always wanted to ask you was, did you, when you came to Apple and started that vision of the XServe RAID, was that something where you leveraged off of your experience in hardware and kind of knew the hardware principles and what chips and what parts and what software elements needed to be? Or was a lot of the development done at Apple in order to make this product as easy as it was to use?
Yeah, I will tell you, I had the best job in the world at Apple from that perspective. I mean, going to a major player, you know, one of the top companies in the world that never had a storage practice, and having the CEO, legendary CEO, say, "How would you do this?" And that's how that started. And I said, "Here's what I would do," knowing the customers, knowing the market, knowing where we're going. And I laid out a couple different approaches, and it was one of the greatest experiences of my life was sitting there and getting this answer. The answer was, I laid out essentially an A and a B. The A was, this is the way people normally do it. This is the way you make the most money. Build, and I can't go into particulars, obviously. Mm-hmm. These are the products you would build if we had to make the most money. The second approach was, this is the best for the user. If we do this, we'll change the world. Users will have a better experience, and we will grow the business. We'll probably make more money in A, but we should do B. And I was told we should do B. And that's what we did. And I went into my book. It was incredible, John. I went in my book. I grabbed some of the best people I ever had worked with at Micronet. Because it was Apple, I was able to attract some of the people I always wanted to work with. We did exactly what you would do in an entrepreneurial experience with great mentors like Steve and Phil. And we built probably what I think was one of the finest products on the market at a price that no one could touch. And that was really the magic of the XServe RAID, is that we built a whole new category. I remember writing the glossary of terms that we would use internally that ended up going external, and how today we use a lot of those terms. And we built this whole low-cost storage initiative. I mean, it was so successful in education and so successful in media, but it was also successful in business. People don't realize how big we really got. I'm not at liberty to say that, but even something we started with Oracle called the low-cost storage initiative, where Oracle databases, no matter what platform they were on, could benefit from using something like an XServe RAID. It was pretty incredible at the time.
Did you start with a kind of like a storyboarding of how you wanted the user interface to look and how you wanted the device to look and what lights and what indicators you wanted to have? And then did you work downward to cause the hardware to implement that and then tell the engineers, this is the software we need? Is that how it went?
Yeah, it was an incredible process because it was so interactive. I would say that, you know, we had the chance to build the best team and to draft some of the best people. And so we interactively worked together, both hardware and software, and of course, user experience, HI, this human interaction. We worked together to build this, and it was probably one of the best experiences of my life from that perspective as well. I learned quite a bit. I thought I knew everything about product development until I went to Apple. And what I learned was that you could do it even better, and you could have more of an experience that was really an interactive experience where, you know, it wasn't it wasn't the marketing people telling the engineers you'll do this and the engineers saying we have a better way.
Right.
And then human interaction saying it'll only work on this hardware. It was more of a let's put this vision out of what it should be and how it should look, and then let's redefine it. And so there were things from obviously the design team and Johnny Ives and his team there where they had a certain look in mind that would match the rest of the line. But there was also things like how many LEDs were on the system and what the LEDs did, and how, you know, think about this. We built the biggest Java app at Apple so that we could be cross-platform. I mean, it's interesting because my career after Apple, I have done native apps. I've done native Mac apps for the most part and stuff that runs on iOS. And even with Simply here, we're doing stuff on Watch app. I've done stuff on native Windows as a partner. But there was one where we wanted to go to all the markets. And at the time, we built native Java. And in fact, we built our own Java classes so it would look fantastic. So things like that, we're just inventing things that nobody had ever done, not thinking like you're Apple, but thinking like you want to fit into the market, but do it in an Apple way. Similar to me, the way iTunes was done so it would be cross-platform between Windows and the Mac. And, you know, it was the best Windows software at the time. So we had that approach, and I think that's really where the magic came from.
It was a magical product, and I had the pleasure of being able to sell it to my customers when I was on the sales side there. And it was a crazy, cool, loved product because it was so easy to use. And as you just described, it had that special Apple flavor, that usability, that love for the simplicity and the power of it, all wrapped up into something that nobody had ever seen before. So congratulations. But there came a time when Apple seemed to lose interest. When did it reach its peak, and when did Apple cancel it? I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, I think it was a shift. I mean, Apple went through a shift, to be more of a mobile device company and to really look at things differently. And, you know, by the end of 2010, the XServe and XServe RAID programs were both gone at Apple. It didn't mean that Apple cared less about the market. It's just that they looked at the market changing. So I think after I left Apple, you know, it looked at other things. I mean, partially it's how far do you go? I looked at it and said, I can go somewhere else and do something beyond what we did at Apple, taking what we learned there and what we envision the future being and open it up more. And that's when we started Active Storage.
Cool. Well, this is a good place to take a break because that's the next thing I want to ask you about, Active Storage. But first, it's time for a short break, folks. We'll be back in 60 seconds, and I'm going to ask Alex about what came next.
Hello there, all you fabulous Background Mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
We are back. Thank you very much, Kelly. So then there came the time when you decided, as you said, to go off and do something that's the next step, so to speak, and that was Active Storage. Tell me how that got started.
Well, that's interesting, John. We, I had a few people who had worked with at Apple, some people that you know as well, and a few people that I had worked with along the way, both at Micronet and some people came from some of our competitors, and we were looking at what the next big thing could be. And in particular, we were trying to look at the media space and the Apple space and said, what if you were outside of Apple? What could you do that you couldn't do when you're inside of Apple? So you could really address
remember that. That was one of the keys when we talked about active storage. Yes.
Exactly. Absolutely. You could embrace things. You could embrace things you couldn't within Apple. And so active storage had a meteoric rise. I mean, it was incredible how fast the company grew, because we had the principles of what we felt were Apple principles and extreme ease of use, you know, basically support that everybody just cared about, and also innovation and being able to put innovation in. And that's really what we did right. You know, a lot of people ask me, well, what happened? What went wrong? Well, like anything else, you know, without going into details, part of the problem was that we went after a market that wasn't so popular. The Apple market was not popular with investors. And unfortunately, doing hardware products requires an incredible amount of investment. And so our investors decided that there were better ways for the company to go. A lot of us didn't agree with that. And, you know, unfortunately, after 5 years, we left Active Storage, and so Active for all intents and purposes went away after that.
But you learned a lot about the marketplace and the extension of the technology you founded at Apple. So that was the good side.
Oh yeah, there was no doubt about that. In fact, what it did is it gave us the chance to really look at not only what we could patent and what we could do going forward, although we did a lot of that, but really to hone in on the media market and figure out what the next big thing and where the challenges were. I mean, we all know that for the most part, the IT market and what happens in IT is going to be driven down by price, and people don't really care about ease of use or capability so much as they do about how do I get the lowest price on that. In fact, you're seeing that so much in the outsourcing going on, is that they really don't care what they're outsourcing to. They just care that it's getting done. And in the Mac market in particular, the media side of that Mac market, where all the growth is in the large, you know, large capacity, and in the storage side, people care about what they're using and how they do it. And ultimately, everything we build are tools, and the key with a tool is how well does it fit in your hand? You know, how well do you use it? It's like choosing a keyboard. How does it feel to your hand? How does it feel to your fingers? Or choosing a monitor, how good does that display look? And we tried to do that same thing. And after Active, a lot of us went to Quantum, because we had been OEMing StorNext, because we had a lot of experience with XSAN, which is built from the same code base. And so we wanted to make sure all the customers were covered, and that we didn't have any customers that were left in the cold. And so we spent a couple of years helping Quantum understand these customers and also to take care of all the ex-active customers.
And then the big step came, and that was the founding of Simply. So bring us up to date and tell us about Simply and the vision that you have there and the company that you've just founded.
Yeah, I think that's the next step. I mean, things you learn along the way, John, I think are important. I think that's what it is. So I came from these beginnings as a essentially an engineer, and then to some extent a product manager and a product designer. Ran the organization for both, you know, sales and marketing while I was at Micronet. Started in Micronet when I got there was a startup, so I learned a lot from that. Started Active, learned quite a bit there, learned what I wanted to do right and what we did wrong there. And Quantum was refreshing because it was a large corporation that had been in business for a long time, and I hope that we were able to affect a lot of their technology, like bringing StorNext 5 to market, which I think still is one of the best file systems on the market. It really makes things work really well. But there came a time when a couple of us came from Quantum, but a lot of us who had worked at Active before had said, it's time to go do it again. It's time to do it and take everything we learned from Active, but go to where the market's really driving. And that's what Simply is all about. Simply is embracing the idea that things can be easier. They don't have to be hard. Embracing the idea that shared storage into work groups that are doing things today they've never done, like media production. I mean, everybody's doing media production today, from single users to very large organizations. And that media production is changing, but these tools don't have to be hard to use. You know, you don't have to unlock the toolbox with a special key and then have to twiddle a lock to get it off and then figure out how to open it and then look through the toolbox to find the tool you want. It should be there, and it should be.
And as you said, people who care about the product that they create, they also care about the tools they use, right?
Exactly. And that content creators today are changing the way they do things. It's very rare anymore that you're going to see, I mean, this wasn't even true 3 years ago, but it's very rare anymore that you're going to see large organizations with hundreds of people doing editing, hundreds of people doing color correction, video production. You're just not going to see that. You're going to see small work groups doing big things. You're going to see, when you look at the credits of companies, are you credits of movies, and you look at the number of companies on there, a lot of those companies, from effects companies to editors, are small organizations. You're seeing more independent film makers. You're seeing more manufacturers and general business people actually getting in the frame and doing video. You're seeing more independent production happening where there's two or three or five people on those 80,000 hours of YouTube that show up every day. You're seeing a lot of that information come from small companies. In fact, you're seeing different people making TV shows and movies, companies like Netflix and Amazon. Sure, and there are many others out there.
They're passionate and they're flexible and they're aggressive and they want to move. Yeah,
and there's nothing wrong with the big studios, you know, the Disneys of the world and the Paramounts and the Sonys. But the difference is, it's really hard to do that production without that passion you don't have. And people like we did, they want to go to smaller companies. There's not many Apples out there that are so entrepreneurial for people to go to. They don't want to go to big stagnant companies. They want to be able to have the flexible freedom to do creativity and have tools that allow them to do that. For instance, what I was seeing happening is that people were abandoning the smaller companies, the smaller media creators. They said, if you want to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, you can do 4K video correctly. You can do multiple streams of that. You can basically do any type of editing and color correction. But if you want to spend a few thousand dollars, you're stuck with either an inferior piece of hardware that you probably can't use, or maybe it's not reliable over long periods of time. You won't even know it's reliable till you lose all your data, or you're stuck. You're stuck somewhere, right?
I think you found your market.
So we wanted to change.
I think you did.
Yeah, and we wanted to change that, and we pioneered some really cool technology at Simply so far, and we've been putting some proprietary technology together, and it's not a matter of quote unquote marketing like so many companies have in this space, where they just, you know, essentially put a hard drive in the box. They use someone else's off the shelf software. That's not what we do. I mean, we build it from the ground up. We have engineers.
So give me the president's elevator speech. So tell me about Store, Share, and Pro. Tell me about each one of these products and how they do what they do.
Sure. Okay. That's great. Thank you, John. So if you look at it, we have a family of products, but this family is probably closer knit than most families. It starts with Simply Store, which is your, in essence, it's your desktop RAID system. So it's very safe and secure, high capacity, extremely high performance desktop RAID for a single user, where you can basically do anything you want to do on a Mac, a PC, or a Linux system. And on the Mac, you can do any type of content creation you want to, from 4K video all the way down, have enough capacity and enough performance with an integration of what a lot of people call ecosystem tools to be able to do what you want to do. And
let's put a little technical aside in here and insert an explanation of RAID and RAID 5 for us. Some of the listeners may not be up to speed.
Sure, and that's a great thing. So RAID is, it used to be called the redundant array of inexpensive disks. And today we call it the redundant array of independent disks, because all disks are inexpensive in our world today. But the idea of RAID in its basic form is that it protects the data. So a RAID 0, most people will not call that true RAID, because what it does is it allows you to take the disks, put them together in a way that you're interleaving the data between them, and it adds speed to the system. The other RAID levels, protected RAID, popular ones are 3, 5, and 6 today, mostly 5 and 6. 5 and 6 are parity RAIDs. That means that what you're doing is you're literally spreading the data across a number of hard drives, getting more performance. Think of more workers doing the same amount of work, and one of those workers has a checklist to make sure all the work was done and could recreate the work if any one of the workers fell down.
So the key is really if one of those RAIDs, if one of those drives crashes, most users lose all their data. But if one of those drives crashes in the RAID system with four drives, then you just hot connect.
Well, you would say hot swap, but you don't have to. You actually hot fix. So
yeah, you just put a new drive in and it rebuilds.
Automatically.
There we go.
Yeah, it's automatically grabbing an algorithm of the data written. So think of it like this: in a RAID 5, it's a parity RAID that literally keeps a copy of all the data onto the other disks. So it's truly a RAID level, you know, a way of protection that does interleaving of the data in an algorithm across the others. So, and it hops between the disks. So no one disk that goes down can cause all the disks to be lost. Unfortunately,
this is very cool.
In our world today, yeah, it's very, very cool. In our world today, there was a need for RAID 6, which is double parity, uses a different technique. RAID 5 uses XOR. RAID 6 uses something called P's and Q's. But essentially what you're doing now, you have two disks that have all that data. And that's simply because the rebuild time on a disk is so long and the disks are so big, you have such an exposure of one disk. So today it's not uncommon to have 8 or 10 terabyte disks. But the advantage of the RAIDs is that you also get performance along with it. And we can play a lot of little games with caching and other tools to be able to get more performance out of a set of disks than you can off a single. And really, not all RAIDs are created equal. A lot of them are pretty basic technology. But if you really get sophisticated, the RAID stack is really the key. And when you have many years of people working on RAID stacks and understand them, it can be a completely different product. And then, of course, like anything else, it's how you set it up and how you get it. You know, I'm a car guy, and I know that if you have a car with wider tires that sits lower, it's going to handle better. And so, you know, not all cars are created equal. And if you have more horsepower in the car, you need to have more stiction so the car doesn't slide all over the road. The same is true with RAID. The more horsepower you have, the more controls you need. But if you can make it easy for people and you can automate that, that's the key. So one last thing on SimpliStore that's interesting is we have a technology in there. And we don't expect you to be a RAID expert. We don't expect you to know what information you're going to tell the RAID system to make it better in the things you do. So a lot of people have approached this to say, here's a bunch of parameters you can change, and some magic people on the internet are going to give you these parameters, or you're going to see this in some bulletin somewhere, maybe online. Maybe you're going to see a YouTube video and figure out how you're going to optimize your RAID based on what other people have done. Well, the problem is, you know, people aren't always right on that, and you don't know, the way you use things isn't the way other people do. So we took the technology a step further. So imagine you take a SimpliStore and you attach it to your Mac.
And less expensive, too, because we've evolved over the years. When Apple first came out with the XOR RAID, it was a $10,000 product. Now you can put one of these RAID 5 devices on a person's desk for roughly $1,000, maybe even less in some cases, right?
Yeah. A little over $1,000, you can have the same capacity you actually had in XSERVE RAID, which was $7,995 that was the base cost. So say it was around $14,000 by the time you were done, mm-hmm. for about $1,000 today. You know, you can have a usable, nearly 20 terabytes of usable storage at about four times the speed of the Exer RAID just back in, say, 2005. So, you know, we've evolved a lot, not to mention it's probably more reliable. I mean, that's hard to believe because the Exer RAID was so darn reliable, but technology has gotten better. But what we did, John, to optimize it, that's interesting, is we don't expect you to be an expert to do it. So what we did is we said, well, you're attached to the Mac. We know what applications you have on the Mac. We know what you're doing with those. Let's go look for the media applications. They're probably things by Adobe. They're probably things by Apple. You know, they are certain named applications. We go look at the applications on your computer. Then we look over the last 30 days at the jobs you've done. We don't look into the jobs. We just look at the size of the jobs and the resolutions you use. And then we say, what performance did you need on your disk system to be able to achieve that? And then we go optimize the disk for that.
Oh, cool.
Because
you should mention that this store device is this awesome black cylinder that looks a lot like a Mac Pro. So not only is it easy to use, it's easy on the eyes too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, John, that's the other thing about Simply Store is that Simply Store, we did two things that other people haven't done. One is we completely redesigned the way something sits on your desk because, you know, one of the problems with hard drives is they spin, they make noise, they have mm-hmm. to be cool, you need a fan. I'm not going to say we learned a lot from the Mac Pro, hint, hint, wink, wink, but what we learned is that you can make something whisper quiet on your desktop. And the reason to go round is that it works like a chimney effect. You know, it's a convection
and you
cooling.
Can swap
it doesn't
your,
mean you don't have a fan in there.
And you can swap out SSDs and hard disks interchangeably in this Simply Store.
You can level the performance. In fact, cool thing about Simply Store is it's a cylinder. When you want to get to a hard drive, if something were to go bad, you simply swipe a button on your iOS device, and it opens up automatically. It has a motor driven system. Opens it up. You pull the drive out. Put a new drive in. Go to your iOS. Push close. It automatically closes, and it runs around 32 dBs of sound.
How much data can you put on a Simply Store?
Well, up to 64 terabytes per Simply Store.
64 terabytes. And what if you needed more storage than that? What would be the next step up?
Well, you got a couple choices. One is you can digitize 7 of those. They're Thunderbolt 2 or Thunderbolt 3. And Thunderbolt 2 can be upgraded to Thunderbolt 3 when Apple goes there. It's a simple change out in the field by user to do. But the bigger thing is Simply Share. And Simply Share gives you the ability to take that 64 terabytes, add up to another 64 terabytes, any combination of hard drive or SSD, and be able to share that among 8 users on Thunderbolt or even 10 additional users on 10 gig or 1 gig Ethernet. So this is the first product out there that you can literally take your desktop RAID, you get a bunch of people that you want to work together with, you take that RAID, move it onto a Simply Share, now everybody shares it. In fact, add a second one, and we can automatically move content between because the Simply Share runs StorNext 5, which is Quantum's file system that's 100% compatible with Xan, which is built into every Mac. So you're starting to see how the family works here, John.
Mm-hmm.
And so the beauty of that mm-hmm. is to have the capability now of being able to say, well, I'm a single user, but someday I might work with other people. Let me buy the Simply Store, and when I go to work with other people, I'll put it on a Simply Share, and now multiple people can share my same Thunderbolt. And if I decide that I don't have enough storage, I can add another one up to 64 terabytes, and we'll automatically rebalance all the content and all the data across the two. So you get the performance of now 16 hard drives instead of 8. So you basically now can actually perform for more users where others can't.
And you
now
can also, you can monitor the health of this system on your iPhone. Can you not?
Well, you can even monitor it on your watch. So yes, so it has. We have a watch app that gives you full monitoring capability. Not only the health, but also the performance and the capacity. You can tell how full it is. You can tell how well it's working,
nice.
And you could have several of these. And so if you had a bigger company and you had a lot of small work groups, you could have several of these in the workroom. In fact, Simply Store, Simply Share, and Simply Pro, which is the rack mount big brother, think of that as, you know, I don't want to get in trouble for saying that, but think of that as something like Xserve RAID circa 2016, where it might have evolved if the team took it there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Simply Pro uses all the same tools. Every single product that in the Simply line is managed the same way. So if you have a Simply Store at home, which is a basic RAID, they could start out with, you know, just around $1,000. You could go to work and have a Simply Pro there, where you could have 20 high speed connected fiber channel users and say 100 IP users, all on the same system, and you could run a facility and have multiple terabytes of Simply Pro. Each Simply Pro is 768 terabytes. So, and it sits in a rack.
And it's incredible.
And the other thing about Simply Pro. Yes, the Simply Pro is even easier. And what we love about the Simply Pro is it has a full front panel on the Simply Pro is actually an LCD panel.
About time.
So it will not only just display, isn't it about time? It'll not only just display all the information, its own health. It'll show you configuration if you want, how the system's set up in the rack. It'll show you the time. It'll show you the date. It'll show you the weather. I mean, it'll even put your logo on there, play movies for you. And it'll flash red when something goes wrong, and it'll stay green otherwise. You know, it's such an incredible thing that just had to happen in 2016 that we can't believe it hasn't happened before. I mean, it's really the change, and that also runs StorNX 5 embedded. So what's really incredible is that is truly an all-in-one product that someone who has XSAN today can move up to, still use all their XSAN clients, and there's, of course, no charge on the XSAN clients because it's built in the operating system, but they can plug right into Simply Pro, get that same experience, and share in their office. Then go home at night, and, you know, all the creative people on Macs always moonlight, so they might have a Simply Store at home they can work on. So their watch app will just let them know what's going on with everything in their life.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we're running out of time, but I want to ask you, at your option, one more jackpot question, something that's I've been nagging me for a long, long time. And you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but do you foresee, or how do you feel about a sort of like home storage appliance for home users? You know, when our Time Machine drive fails, we grumble and we hope that we can install a new drive and start all over, you know. But Do you foresee a market for a really low cost personal RAID system that would have all your expertise and legendary ease of use and be, you know, something that would be the next step beyond Apple's aging Time Machine, say? Ponder with me or not.
As you wish. Interesting, John. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, really quickly, here's how I look at it. I think people are moving to the cloud, and I think that there's something to be said about having, you know, the three rules of backup. You have one that you use, one that, let's say, you know, one is to your computer, one that's on a hard drive, and possibly one that's in the cloud. It used to be tape, but not many of us use that anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be up in the cloud. I think there's a few products that are changing that market, the quote unquote personal cloud products, where everybody in your whole organization, or your house, as I like to call my organization, is my house, my wife and my daughter. Everybody can share content. So it goes beyond what happens in the Time Machine, but it goes to how do I share photos? How do I do other things?
Right.
I think that
there's a few products out there.
Now, we have a partner.
And touches on my devices and backs them up, and I don't have to worry. And if and if a drive fails, I just hot swap another drive.
Yeah, and I think that's the next thing to happen. I mean, there's a few things that are out there. I mean, our partner, they jointly develop our products. They manufacture our products. It's Promise Technology. They have a product called Apollo. I would check that out. It's on the Apple Store, and it comes.
I have one sitting on my desk.
Of where you want to go.
I have Apollo sitting on my desk.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. Well, I can't wait to check it out.
There's a lot of And I think it's only going to get better in the future. And I think it'll be driven by customer demand and what customers want. And I think that's really where it's going to go. I think it's going to go beyond the time capsule, beyond time machine. I think the cloud will play a big role. I think personal clouds are really going to be where people want to go. And I think that you're going to have, you should always remember that RAID is not a substitute for backup or archive. Right. And you always have to have both.
It's redundancy, but things not that backup.
Things are coming out. Protection is important. Things are coming out like Apollo, and technologies in the cloud are really going to drive what we do next. And I think that we want content everywhere. And so we want it on our phones. We want our iOS devices. We want it. We want it, you know, at our houses, on our computers. And I think the personal cloud idea lets us feel good about that. And, you know, you should check those out. It's pretty, pretty incredible product.
Well, you know, we've run out of time. We've gone way over, actually, but I wanted to because I just can't help myself listening to you and wanting to hear about all the stuff that you've done in your product. So I'm happy to just, you know, let it run way over time here, but we really got to wrap it up right now. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show and filling us in on the history of your personal technical development, all the things that you learned, and how that has blossomed and reformed itself. And simply, and we'll put the show note, and we'll put in the show notes a link to Simply. And I did a news story back in April. We'll link to that too. And so we'll make sure everybody knows how to find articles in your website. But tell us how to contact you if people want to contact you directly, or if they want to contact Simply. What's the best way to do that?
Sure, John. We're always here to answer any questions on storage, no matter what they are. Anybody can call us. You can reach me personally, and I'm alex@gosimply.com. You can reach us on Facebook as facebook.com/gosimply, Twitter at gosimply, and we're just gosimply.com. So we'd love to hear from you, any of your listeners. And John, we'd love you to play with our products as well.
Well, I hope to get a chance someday to do that. Okay, folks, thanks for coming by and listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. Alex, thank you for being on the show, and we'll see you next time on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.